I'd just like to introduce myself. I'm Penelope Harness. I work at the University of West England in Bristol. And I train primary school teachers to work in schools with a particular interest in teaching them how to teach history in school. So I'm going to just share with you some of my thoughts about teaching history to the very youngest children in our primary schools. And this is one of my favourite quotes, actually. I was meant to be born on my birthday, but I arrived 2 days late. And it's been used very much as an example to say, well, actually, you know, teaching history is beyond the very youngest children. They can't talk about history. It's too abstract a subject. And they can't actually put things in order. They can't talk about time. And recently, in primary history, this has actually been followed up because I could quote from Dennis Hayes, who's just said that history concepts will always be beyond both the experiential and conceptual reach of the youngest pupils. And his advice is that early years practitioners should permit children to revel in the warm glow of fairy tale fantasy until they're old enough to be formally introduced to it, to real history, at a later age. And I'd just like to talk a little bit about that I actually think that young children are quite capable of learning history and to refute some of Dennis Hayes' arguments. And first of all, I'd like to say that I think one of the advantages of the national curriculum when it was first introduced was actually that it brought history to very young children. Up until the introduction of the national curriculum, children's experience in Key Stage 1 of history had been very patchy. In fact, there were various reports which were saying that for some infant schools there was no history going on at all. So I think we've got a lot to be thankful amongst the early years for the national curriculum. But whilst Hayes might argue that history is too hard for young children, it could be argued that even if history does present challenges, it's vitally important for young children, since it deals with the very issues which they have to confront in their daily lives. As children develop as social beings and enter school, they're learning how to develop positive social relationships, developing understanding of rules and behaviours, and looking at different models for dealing with conflict and disagreement. They're beginning to learn their place in the world, their own unique identity, and the identities which they share with the rest of their group. Children are experiencing firsthand that individuals may hold different views, that they may do things differently from themselves, and that not all individuals share the same experiences. In effect, children are experiencing in their daily lives many of the circumstances which underpin a critical study of history. Studying the dilemmas and conflicts experienced by earlier societies and individuals in the past may contribute to children's own developing understanding of dilemmas and issues which they face in their own personal and daily lives. And I'd just like to draw your attention to what the curriculum guidance for the foundation stage actually says. I've talked about how history can provide guidance for children developing their personal, social and emotional well-being, but also it provides opportunities for developing positive attitudes and dispositions. Young children are very interested in the past. They get excited about it. They start raising questions and wanting to find answers as well. And surely these are some of the positive attitudes and dispositions which we're wanting to encourage. As they're sharing what they're finding out, they're developing their social skills. They're having to listen to each other, hear other people's points of view. They go and talk to their parents, their grandparents, other members of the communities. All the time, they're developing their social skills. Attention skills and persistence. To carry on a historical inquiry, whether it's just looking like what toys were like in the past or what our community was like in the past, requires that you actually concentrate, that you ask questions, you move on from one stage of an investigation to another. You have to stick at it to make sense of it. Language and communication. You're talking all the time. You're explaining your ideas. You're dealing with abstract ideas. Words such as now and then, past, present, before, after, begin to have some meaning when you attach some history to them. And we also get those sort of probability words also. You know, perhaps, might have, could have. Those are getting children to think so much more tentatively about what might have happened. And they're really good uses of language. And, yes, you do have to read and write when you're doing some history as well. So I'd like to say that history is a fundamental in the foundation stage. And I'd like to suggest that we think about it in three ways if we're making a curriculum. We're wanting to think about a curriculum which will enable children to explore who they are, their own identities, beliefs, values, what's important to them. We're wanting it also to help children develop an understanding that of difference, that it's all right to be different. Some people think the same, some people have different lifestyles. And I also believe we should be encouraging children to develop a greater understanding of their locality and the community in which they live. Recent television programmes in the series Who Do You Think You Are have attracted a lot of interest and a fascination about learning about your own life. And children themselves have this fascination about their own life, where they've come from. And the idea that a child who is 4 years old, 4 years old, and you think about how many changes that child has undergone from a baby, their size, for a start, what they could do, what they can do now, what they couldn't do when they were a baby, they couldn't speak, they had to be fed. There's so many things that children can talk about when they see how much they've changed. And here's just a few examples of children thinking about how they've changed. So I played in my playpen. Or my dad picked me up and carried me. I can now walk to school. I don't have to be carried. I was in my pushchair at the zoo. And when I was 3, I was dressed up as Superman. And of course, from there you can also project to the future, which I always think is quite interesting. So I don't know whether this is how you envisage you'll be when you're 100. But as they observe the changes, young children are drawn into explanations. They begin to suggest reasons and some consequences for some of the changes which have occurred to them. And I think what it enables them to do is to start asking questions about who they are. So who am I? How do I know it's me? What other things, apart from how I look, make me me? Perhaps it's the sort of things I've done. Perhaps it's my family. Perhaps it's my feelings. You can see how actually history is moving over into personal and emotional well-being as well. What's the same about me and other children? What sort of experiences do I share? And what is different? What makes me different? And is it all right to be different? And I think these are really important things that we can develop through history. Well, whilst children may share many common experiences in their childhood and stages of development, some children's experiences may be very different. And work with refugee children, for example, reveals some of the dangerous and unhappy experiences which they've encountered, which they might not choose to share with others in their class. And other children might find experiences distressing to recall, and sensitivity is required on behalf of practitioners who should know their children. But despite this, I do think it's important that children do have the opportunity to develop their awareness of people's different experiences and to recognise that not everyone shares the same experiences as they do. And in this respect, I think history can play an important role. My second point after learning about themselves is actually learning about other people, learning about other people's lives. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about a study which was conducted in Northern Ireland, which I think has resonance for some of our work in history. Although there are only a few studies, research does suggest that young children are aware of events surrounding them and that they do begin to develop an awareness of divisions within society and a sense of them and us. Connolly's survey of 3 to 6 year old children in Northern Ireland concludes that only a small percentage of 3 to 4 year olds demonstrate an ability to recognise divisions exist. And yet, by the age of 5 and 6, there is a greater tendency for children to identify with one community or another, and also to make prejudiced statements against the other community. However, Connolly also observed that even very young children, 3 and 4 years old, demonstrate a clear tendency to internalise some of the cultural preferences of their different communities. For example, when shown a British Union flag and the Irish tricolour flag, the majority of Protestant 3-year-olds, 60%, liked the Union flag best, and 64% of the Catholic 3-year-olds preferred the Irish flag. Similarly, when shown a picture of an orange march, only 3% of Protestant 3-year-olds, as compared with 18% Catholic 3-year-olds, said that they disliked marching. So there is some evidence to suggest that communal divisions do impact on young children, and this was also corroborated by observations from early years practitioners who observed quite aggressive play which reflected the communal divisions within the playgroups where they were working. So as a result of this, Connolly's next research actually planned a series of interventions in playgroups based on 3 dimensions of difference, disability, race and cultural difference. And they planned cartoons which were to be shown on television for children to watch. And there was a load of curriculum materials which also went with this. Puppets, jigsaw puzzles, games, a whole range of things. And following these interventions, Connolly's research indicates that young children were more ready to engage with difference and to empathise more fully with the feelings of children who are different from themselves. And the implications, which we need to be careful about this, but it does raise some interesting pointers, that the implications which Connolly suggests are that practitioners actually need to be a bit more proactive in challenging young children's implicit assumptions and in providing them with alternative role models. Indeed, Connolly concludes that to achieve this, practitioners need to be focusing more on widening children's experiences and awareness of the range of cultural events and symbols associated with a variety of communities. And if that's what history can do in the early years, actually extending children's awareness beyond their community of society's lives outside that, I think it can play a really important role. And I think it reminds us really, doesn't it, about how deeply culture informs the way we see the world, how we react within the world, and how an understanding of wider cultures can actually move us beyond our initial thoughts and our own culture. So I would argue that stories about people and events in the past permit children to explore different beliefs and values and different ways of life. Children can explore motivation, choices people made, results of their choices, consider people's feelings and how they might be different from their own. Involve them in taking into account the decision-making which people in the past actually engaged with. And while the national curriculum in England doesn't stipulate which people should be taught about at Key Stage 1, it is actually becoming very limited. It's limited and limiting. We find that Florence Nightingale is probably the most widely studied personage in the history curriculum, along with Mary Seacole and Isambard Kingdom Brunel. And if you think about the wealth of personalities, I know I should encourage a little bit of audience participation, but I'm certain that if I actually went round, you'd all have some character or person who you thought would be significant to learn about, and it possibly wouldn't be Florence Nightingale or Isambard Kingdom Brunel. So it seems a real shame that in so many of our Key Stage 1 classrooms that these are the personalities which have been focused on. And similarly, the Great Fire of London as the event. And I often wonder, you know, sort of if you live in the north of England particularly, what relevance the Great Fire of London has actually to you. Or And the other one, Bonfire Night, I also think it's very strange the way we teach that as well. It's very celebratory. You know, we think actually, a lot of 5 and 6 year olds think that Guy Fawkes was quite a good chap, really. Quite a jolly chap, in some ways. We don't actually get the message, you know, through a cross of terrorism, violent opposition, or anything like that in the way that we teach Bonfire Night and Remembrance Day. So as I say, I think this is very limited and limiting, and I think we need to move on to a more varied selection of personalities and events so that we can maximise opportunities to engage children in decision-making and reflection on why these people might be important and why they made those decisions, why they acted as they did, and the consequences of that. And I'd just like to refer to some of the work by Hilary Clare. This is a scheme of work which she has on the QCA website, Respect for All. And here she's taken three characters, Ruby Bridges, a 1960s civil rights campaigner, Bessie Coleman, a black woman who became an aviator, and Frederick Douglass, a freed slave who worked for the abolition. And she has structured them into investigations for 6 and 7 year olds, which enables them to really engage with historical questions and also to see how they might be relevant in their own lives. Because maybe some of these children are meeting similar, or are having to make similar decisions which people in the past had to meet. And finally, I said that we needed to look at understanding more about our community and where we live. So history isn't something out there. We're surrounded by history. Our school has a history inside the school and around it. Children walk down the roads to school every day. Isn't it some of our responsibility to actually make them aware of their environment around the school, about where they live? And I think that's the final point that I'd like to make. So our children in Bristol go off to have a look at Brunel, to go and visit the Brunel sites. You notice Brunel hasn't got his cigar there. It's been shaded out. And so these children caught the train to Temple Meads, and they first of all they go and they visit Brunel's engine shed, have a look around there. They then go on a barge in the harbour to have a look at the SS Great Britain. And then they go on up to the Clifton Suspension Bridge. And then they have to go and make a display about it when they get back to school. But so they went, they had a look around where they lived. But the bit which I thought was really important was how the whole family were engaged in this. So parents, carers, who had not necessarily been involved with the schoolwork before, were dragged off to the library to find a book on Brunel. A grandfather brought in a cutting, a newspaper cutting, of when the SS Great Britain had actually come up the Avon, and he kept it for 20-odd years, and he suddenly produced it and came into school with it. The children, these 6-year-olds, took their parents around the Brunel sites themselves and actually gave their parents more information about Brunel, were able to talk about their school trip to their parents. It was all places they could visit because it was all very close. And I think that's really family learning at its most powerful, where people are really involved and everybody can share in finding out a little bit more about where they live. So, just to recap then, creating a history curriculum which is meaningful for the early years. Three principles identified at the beginning of this paper need to be understood by teachers and practitioners. Many early years teachers are not history specialists, and they have little in-depth knowledge of history. And my experience of training teachers over a number of years is it's very patchy, and yes, there is quite a lot of knowledge of the 20th century, and they don't know much else. So trainees teachers require access to a wider historical knowledge base and also an understanding of the nature of history, of the discipline, and some of the questions which intrigue historians. Some knowledge of the historian's craft is vital for all the practitioners to be able to develop a history curriculum which is meaningful for all children in their care. So knowledge of the historian's craft, however, also needs to be firmly embedded with an understanding of child development and ways, just as John was saying, ways in which children learn, questions which interest children. And it's actually the marriage between the historical knowledge and understanding and a knowledge of child development and what works best in the classroom, which is going to make a curriculum which is suitable for all children.